Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. The end of our life is not something, frankly, most of us want to think about too much, but there are a few things more important than making decisions about the type of end-of-life care that you do or you don't want. And it's just as important to then talk with your loved ones and your healthcare providers to make sure that your wishes are known and honored. We're going to talk about that today with Mia Morissette, who's the Advanced Care Planning Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. And she's here to help you know how to make end-of-life healthcare decisions and who to involve. And Mia, welcome to the Ideas Network. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments, or maybe your own experiences. Do you have an advanced directive and healthcare power of attorney? If you do, love to hear about your experiences there. If not, what's holding you back? Have you had some experiences you wish would have turned out better, maybe with a spouse, or maybe with grandparents or grandparents? I know it's always a hard thing to talk about, but we need to do it. We need to do it. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. And one of the reasons for doing this program right now is that April 16th is National Healthcare Decisions Day. And again, Mia, welcome. What are the goals of that?
It's basically to get people interested in the idea that this is an important topic, and the documents shouldn't be left on your kitchen table, and conversation should happen. It's no coincidence that it's April 16th, the day after tax day, because what are the two things that we can't avoid in this life?
Death and taxes.
So complete your taxes, don't take a breather, and move into this very important topic.
What kind of decisions should be made before they're needed?
It's really important for people to reflect on what their values are and reflect on situations they may have had with loved ones who have been through an end-of-life process, and look at what went well with that person's end-of-life process and what didn't, and start thinking about how you would apply that information that you've learned to your own end-of-life decisions. One really important thing to think about is, who would you choose to speak for you in the event you can't speak for yourself? That's something that's really crucial. People often will default to their oldest child or their spouse, but is that really the best person to entrust with your healthcare decision making in the event you're not able to make your own decision? So that's an important point.
Yeah, and that's something that I guess most of us, or many people, don't want to do it. They don't want to deal with it.
The thing of it is, we plan such minute details of our lives, Larry. We plan that vacation. We plan that family reunion. We plan education. We plan retirement. So I'm just curious about that, getting over that hump to have these discussions, because what I find in my work with patients and while I'm out and about talking about this topic, that they're very rich, rewarding discussions if you can just leap over the fence.
Well, what are the best ways to document wishes? I think if you can document your wishes, then you have something to talk from when you're visiting with those family or friends.
Really interesting, the advanced care planning process that we're working at UW Hospital and throughout the state with Honoring Choices Wisconsin through the Medical Society, is the document is important, but the conversations are more important.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The document is the end point to the conversation. And also, the document is meant to be a living, breathing thing. It's not a once-and-done deal. It needs to be revisited on a regular basis.
And who makes that? Let's maybe just go through the process. Let's talk about the process of of creating an advanced directive is kind of the term.
It is, correct. Advanced directive is the way you document your advanced care planning conversations.
Yeah. And so talk us through that process of creating one.
So you can go on the Wisconsin Medical Society website, and the new document that we are using throughout the state of Wisconsin is available there. So the idea is that you start working on your ideas and thoughts and who you want to choose as a healthcare agent before you have the document in place. Like I said, the conversations are what are crucial. But, of course, your healthcare team and your family do want something to work from, and it is really good to have that in writing. So there's the Wisconsin Power of Attorney for healthcare form. There's the new form on the Honoring Choices Wisconsin website. It's really important that you read the information about who can witness those documents, because that gets very confusing for people. Your healthcare agent can't witness. Family members cannot witness. People you're naming in your will cannot be witnessed. And only healthcare workers who are chaplains, social workers, or volunteers of your healthcare organization that you go to can witness that document. So that's an important point that can invalidate the hard work you've done.
So attorney?
People go to attorneys and they do the general estate planning. There are some attorneys I hear that engage really well with people about their healthcare decision making, but sometimes I see that it's a check, 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 and then sign your name on the bottom of the form. Yep, it gets filed in your medical record, but what conversations have had for your healthcare agents to know how they're supposed to work on your behalf if need be.
Mia Morissette, our guest today, Advanced Care Planning Coordinator with the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics, talking with her about National Healthcare Decisions Day, and obviously going through this process and talking about advanced directives and what you and I should be doing before our end of life to make known and to communicate with our friends and loved ones our wishes. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Ruth in Altoona up with a comment. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. As part of end of life is really how do you live that end of your life? So that really is, you know, your life. And my mother lived with us for over 2.5 years. She chose not to go into a nursing home. And she had some of her own money to be able to do that with, which was wonderful for her. But not everybody does. And in the state of Wisconsin, we have a program called IRIS. It's IRIS, IRIS. And that program does allow people who otherwise couldn't afford it to be at home, to be cared for at home by the people they choose to be cared for. It's really made a difference in the number of people going into nursing homes and has saved Medicare, Medicaid money. It's a wonderful option. I'm sure you're aware of it. And it is a program that we really have to, let, you know, our legislators and so forth know that we don't want to lose that program in the state because it is cost effective and it allows people who are frail elders, to be able to stay home.
Well, Ruth, thank you so much for calling. Mia, a comment from you.
I would like to say thank you also, Ruth. 70% of Americans say they want to die at home. 70% die at institutions, hospitals, nursing homes, etc. And you bring up a great point that a person's financial stability sometimes is the thing that allows people to have a plan of care to die at home. And so IRIS is an important program, and I agree with you. It's important to let our legislators know that we need to keep this program for our frail elderly.
Yeah. Ruth, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. IRIS stands for... That's an acronym, I'm sure.
I do not know.
We're off the top. Yeah, no, that's all right. Ruth, we'll probably... Cheyenne will look that up and we'll have it. But IRIS is how it's referred to in all all cases. Thanks again, Ruth, for joining us. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Well, the various points I think we need to go back to and talk about. How should you really decide, for example, who will be a healthcare power of attorney?
You know, there are some statements that we talk with people about. And again, as I mentioned in the opening, it's not just the default to your spouse or your oldest child. There's some qualities that you want to look for in a person you're considering choosing to act as your healthcare agent. Someone that you really trust. Someone who willingly accepts the responsibility. And they're willing to follow your instruction, the values and instruction you've discussed with them, even if they disagree with that. And another important point is that it's a person who can manage conflict and make decisions under difficult situations. So, you know, you may have a friend or loved one that you trust, but if they are tough under pressure, you might want to think about someone else. So I often sit with married couples and we do their conversations and their documents together. And it's pretty funny because they often married couples will choose each other to be their primary healthcare agent. And we get talking and they realize they have very, very different ideas and values about the types of care that they would want. And it's often a surprise. So that's why these conversations are so important. I've had just great experiences with couples who go, "What? I never knew." So there you go.
That is very interesting. So maybe it's not the spouse.
You know, also, if you're aging, you know, into your 70s and 80s, maybe your spouse wouldn't be the first person you would choose just because of potential health issues and concerns that they may need to cope with.
John in Madison, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi there.
And what's on your mind?
Well, I was listening and thinking about how when I've had this conversation, I've been surprised at some of the interesting things that come out, how it's not so much about ventilators and CPR and all that sort of thing, but I realized some of the important things in life. Like for me, I have a 3-year-old son, and I realized that if I can watch him smear yogurt on his face for 5 minutes every morning, then really that's the big thing that's quality of life for me. And any decision is going to be based on those sorts of things, like watching my son grow up, being with my family, and that sort of thing. So I kind of wanted to ask, what are the sorts of stories and priorities and lessons do people get from these conversations?
Yeah.
That is just an awesome question. So part of the process that we walk through when we have these conversations and facilitate them with patients and healthcare agents is, what does living well mean to you? And so again, you know, we're talking about end-of-life care, but really, what is living well? And I have had just invaluable conversations. I met with a elderly woman recently, well into her 80s, and she said, "People are going to be so mad if I write this down, but it's so important in my document. If I can, please have someone give me a cigarette if I can smoke safely." Now, we can laugh about that, right? You know, but that is a quality of life thing for her. People, I had a woman recently speak to the fact that if she's not Diane anymore, you know, if the essence of herself, you know, and then we talked about what that means for her.
And we'll take up that conversation, continuing it right after this look at the news. You stay with us. Well, they say the two things you can count on are death and taxes. Tax day is this week. And so is National Healthcare Decisions Day. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. It can really be difficult to plan for the end of your life, but making decisions and making them known can be I think, in the end, a comfort to you and certainly to the people who love you. Mia Morissette is the Advanced Care Planning Coordinator at UW Hospitals and Clinics, with us today to help you know how to make end-of-life healthcare decisions and who to involve. And Mia, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Really appreciate it.
Questions or comments or experiences? I'd love to hear your own experiences in this area, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And just before our news break, you were talking about living well and what it really means to live well. And it varies depending on the person.
You know, for a younger person, just like our caller John mentioned, he is a father of a young child. Joy for him is the breakfast table when it's all chaotic and a mess. You know, someone might be an Iron Man, and joy for them is that next competition and all the training they do. So being physically active is living well for them. Someone who's in their 90s may really enjoy family visits from the grandchildren and great-grandchildren and looking out the window at the birds and reading a good book. So it changes throughout the life span. And yep. That's why it's important to revisit what your wishes are. A young person like John may say, if something happens health-wise, I'm going for it. I want treatment. Give it my all because I have a lot of life ahead of me. But that's the choice that you get to make when you think in advance of a crisis happening.
Just to go along with that, I made a Facebook comment from Kristen who said, don't forget everyone over the age of 18 should talk about their wishes and values for care should they become unable to speak for themselves. And even if you just do it for your family, studies show that families are less depressed or traumatized and distressed if they know what their ill or injured loved ones would have wanted. And even young people can die or get into accidents or develop severe illness. She says, I'm 36 and have had my document completed for 10 years now. And yes, I regularly review it.
So when you think of a person who's 18, you're like, what? What would they need this document for? Also think about what you read in the newspaper about what happens to young adults. They have accidents and different things that happen. And your parents, once you turn 18, legally are not next in line to speak for you. There is no firm next of kin laws in the state of Wisconsin. So having a document in place once you're 18, and we are brainstorming lots of efforts to get out there and talk to younger folks about this. It's hard enough to talk to people who are 60 and older.
Right.
But, you know, I do find young adults, my daughter's 21, and she did her document recently, and it was really a great experience and a feeling of accomplishment that she was able to choose her healthcare agents. Now, there's a lot of young adults who are from divorced families, and you can't always think that your parents would be on the same page about the type of care that you might need in the event of a crisis. So therein lies a really important reason to do that document. So Kristen brings up a great point on that.
Sharon in Madison, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. Is this it's Shannon. But I just wanted to talk about step-parents and the children when the natural parent is ill. My mother was in a coma, and my stepfather wouldn't put us on the hospital list as people who could call to find out about her condition. And he also, even though we knew her wishes and she had written them down, he didn't follow them. But because he was her husband, we had no legal, right to do anything, basically. And it was actually a situation that really tore our family apart.
Oh boy. So that's an example, and I'm really sorry for that, Shannon. It's terrible to have something like that happen. But Mia, I'm sure this is not the only time you've heard that kind of story.
Well, the family conflict can occur in intact families, but you get into combined families and second and third marriages, and that really does become challenging. And that's why having these conversations is really helpful. Often what we ask people to do is have conversations with people in their lives that they're not choosing as their health care agents as well. So people are on the same page, but it's not foolproof, you know, based on your situation, Shannon. That sounds very, very tough. But people.
Yeah, it was. What was tough is that we had those conversations, and yet we needed some other kind of. It's like we needed a different document, something else that said, you know, the children are allowed into work on the decision making, and we didn't do that, and I'm going to do that now. I'm in a second marriage, and I'm going to do that because it's not. You can have the children know and the husband know or the wife know, but when it comes down to it, you have to be able to have everybody involved if that's what the person wants.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've learned from it, and thanks for bringing it up. I mean, this is something that I will bet, Shannon, that lots of other people who are listening thought, oh, I hadn't thought about that or that situation possibly happening. So you did some good for probably a lot of people today. Thank you.
Well, I hope so. Thank you very much for the show. It's really important.
Yeah, appreciate it. David in California, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, greetings. Yeah, we got luckily enough almost a foggy day, so maybe we'll get some rain.
Ah, good.
You know, I wanted to raise something. The previous caller kind of raised a theme, and that was that the children sometimes aren't aware of what their parents have been doing with their finances. And I've been in the course of my life, I've run into a variety of different situations where the parents are involved in some. Whether or not it's shady activity, it's at least activity that they were trying to do tax dodges. And so if the kids inherit these tax dodges, they sometimes are criminally liable if they don't disclose them. And if they're too obvious and they don't disclose them, it's walking into a bear trap. So if your guest is aware of this kind of situation and, you know, the idea of if kids are aware that their parents are not necessarily upfront on all issues, so might be a good idea to discuss it at some point, that whole theme.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for calling, David. And I got to say right up front, Mia is not an attorney, so she's not, I'm sure, not able to give, you know, exact advice on this. You may have some general comments you can make, though, Mia.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry that I'm smiling a little bit. You know, all people have the right to make poor decisions, and it does become complex when our parents are aging. And I cannot speak to the financial aspect of that, so I'm sorry I'll have to leave that question aside.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can, but certainly discussing with children. Discussing important information with children is probably something you're going to want to do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, and a lot of people are really private, and that becomes challenging and almost more about finances than they are about health care. So that is a challenge for family members who are out of town.
Thanks again, David. Louise in Lodi, your turn. Hi, Louise.
Hello. Yes, I have a question. The power of attorney for health care we had drawn up. And what do you do when the doctor completely disregards, will not even consider it?
Do you have an example of that?
Yes, I do. I had an aunt. She was nearly 101 and had an irreversible stroke. And that doctor refused to allow her to have dignity. She put her through tests. She would not listen.
Oh.
What could we do?
That is a really tough situation, and I have heard of that. So, as I mentioned, having the document is not foolproof. Having those conversations helps. But in the event you're seeing a loved one's health care go against their wishes that are well documented, there are patient relations departments in hospitals in ways that you can take your concerns maybe off the floor of the hospital unit, but that's, you know, not a bad idea. Also talking to people on the unit and discussing what your aunt's wishes are. Like I said, the document's not foolproof, and you definitely got into a tough spot. What I'm finding as we're doing this initiative across the state of Wisconsin is that physicians want to know what their patients' plan are, and their goal is to honor those wishes, and we are making headway in communication and having physicians team together with patients and families to make sure that the patient's health care goals are honored at the end of life.
Yeah, I've talked with physicians about this, and, you know, most of them have said, well, you know, we go through all our training, and our training is to keep people alive as long as, you know, we can. I mean, that's sort of the background, and so it's a new, kind of in a way, and a somewhat new way of thinking that physicians have to kind of go through. And so it makes it even all the more important. Now, in this case, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, apparently. We're not sure of all the circumstances there, but if you've got an advanced directive and can show it to the physician and say, look, this extraordinary care is not something that the person wanted, I would think it would make it easier for the physician then to let go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, change care providers in that instance as well.
Yeah.
I've seen anything like it.
What, I'm sorry?
I've never had any doctor quite like that before for my aunt.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, Louise. I thank you for calling and sharing it with us. Sorry for that kind of outcome. Mike in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Where do you get such a document, and how do you record it? How does anybody even know you got one? Do you have to carry it around in your vest pocket? I mean,
yeah. Well, good questions.
Right. So Wisconsin.gov has the power of attorney, the Wisconsin-approved power of attorney document online, as does the Wisconsin Medical Society. What we recommend is that you take that document when it's completed to your physician, and most healthcare systems have electronic medical records. It would be scanned into your medical record. So in the event you have a healthcare crisis, it would be able to be accessed. We also recommend people carry a wallet card with them next to their insurance information and their driver's license that states that they have a healthcare power of attorney, who their primary healthcare agent is, with their contact information, and then the name of the hospital that your physician is affiliated with, where that document is located. We also recommend, when people are traveling a lot, what the heck, just make a copy of your document and carry it on your in your carry-on bag, so it is handy if you're out and about traveling as well. So great question.
Yeah, well, excellent question. Thanks, Mike.
Whoa. Are you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say I get hit by a car.
Yep.
And I go to the hospital, and they don't have time to do all that. Let's say you don't even have a physician. You know, then the best thing is to carry it in a wallet. Is that it?
What I was referring to is a wallet card that would just state where your document is stored. So it is being affiliated with the healthcare system is important, so your document can be accessed as you may show up at different healthcare organizations. But I want to speak to the point of being hit by a car. You're out and about, hit by a car. What happens? And that's a question that people ask me a lot. When EMTs respond at the scene for whatever reason, the goal is always to save the life, save a person's life. You get to the emergency department, the goal is the same. We're going to treat, see what's going to happen with your condition, and then figure out what the next steps are. So, Mike, if you have your healthcare agents, if you've done a document and you appoint your healthcare agents, they would be called in at that point as well to be able to say, well, you know, it was his wishes under these circumstances to treat or not to treat. And that's kind of how the flow of that works.
That was interesting. As you were talking about being gone and traveling around, I can remember the first time that I was in Door County on vacation for a week with some friends, but I was biking off on my own, and I got thinking about that. You know what? I'm wearing bike pants. Well, you're not going to have your billfold in. I had a piece of paper that I had that had all the information of phone numbers of my friends who were back in their in the room or in our a house that we were renting. In case somebody ran over me while
right.
I was riding my bike. Oh, my goodness me. And fortunately, I did not get run over. But I felt better about having that information that where people were going to find it.
Yep, that's simple.
Thanks, Mike. Jim in Crystal Falls, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having this program. It's very timely. I'm about to undergo a cardiac procedure. And one of the things that I'm puzzled about in thinking about organizing my advanced directives is, what do I mean by heroic measures? You know, I heard that one lady speaking about her aunt and an invasive, intrusive testing that was... I'd like some ideas about what do I mean by heroic measures.
Mm. And we hear that term a lot.
So... the way that we frame up the discussion with people is, in the event that you have a condition where it's likely that it is not reversible, you don't know who you are, where you are, or who your loved ones are, and there's little hope of recovery. One of the things on the checkboxes on the form that we use is stop or do not start. IV hydration, feeding tubes, CPR, ventilator and respirator care. So, you know, heroic measures it's very difficult to talk about each person's unique health situation and what would be considered heroic. But those are measures that we talk about with patients and frame it up in the event there is little hope of recovery.
I was just thinking about a friend who passed on unexpectedly and was kind of kept alive for an extra day or two so that the family could get to town and sort of be with him, you know, the children.
So I've actually heard that scenario as well, and people have stated that in their document when their family is far flung across the U.S. or the world that they would like to be kept alive to be able to have their family come and have a goodbye. So that is something that people think about. So, Jim, have you had a conversation with your physician about this topic?
No, I have not.
You know, that's one thing I would really recommend. If you have some questions that are kind of preying on your mind as you're preparing for this big surgery, I would make a list of them and have a chat with your physician or their assistant so you can get a good sense of if things didn't go well, you know, what might that result in? And then that allows you the freedom to think about what choices you would want to make for yourself under those circumstances.
Yeah. And in being able to express my values to them, I think that's huge. I'm really glad to hear you saying that.
Yeah, and good luck to you in your upcoming surgery.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really mean that, Jim. Thank you so much. What might happen if end-of-life care is needed but the person doesn't have an advance directive?
It becomes really challenging under those circumstances, and sometimes the end result is a patient needs to go through the guardianship process. So it goes to the Wisconsin court system, and a judge would appoint a guardian who would be able to speak for the patient. So that's a complex procedure. It's time-consuming. It's expensive. It's emotionally kind of a challenging situation, and we really want to avoid that. And that's part of why I wanted to talk to the listeners today. Really, the goal is these discussions happen upstream. They are not at the bedside. At the hospital. They can be, but that's not the perfect environment. It's not in the intensive care unit. It's when you're across the kitchen table from your family that you start having these conversations and working on your documents.
And with that, boy, we've gone through a lot. And again, those forms, how do we get the forms again?
So the Wisconsin Medical Society, wisconsinmedicalsociety, one word, .org, and wisconsin.gov. Those are the two places that you can access the documents. Also, your healthcare provider, clinic, et cetera, would be able to help you with that.
Yeah, I think we have that up on our Facebook page as well. Mia, great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
You bet. It's an important topic, and I appreciate the chance talking to your listeners about it.
Mia Morissette is the Advanced Care Planning Coordinator at UW Hospitals and Clinics. Great to have her along. And if you haven't done this, get online, get that form, and let's get her done. Let's get her done as soon as we can. Well, by the weekend. I'll give you to the weekend to get it done, okay? Otherwise, I'm going to come after you. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, UW School of Veterinary Medicine, with our guest tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.